stumble bum play that you hit the Bears with.
You like that one?
You like that?
It was clever.
You like that?
Jason Leisure.
I will fight Chris Emma in Starbucks. I will fight him in a Panera, a Dunkin' Donuts, a Quiznos, a White Hen, a Schlotsky's. Name the time, name the place. I'll be there, Chris Emma.
Sounds good.
Bears reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times.
I see that you're wearing your Florida Marlins cap. Did you happen to know who is the radio play-by-play guy for the Miami Marlins?
No, I don't know now for sure. I haven't lived there in so long. I don't know.
Speaks?
Who is?
It's my nephew, Jack McMullen, is the radio voice of the Marlins.
Wow. That's really cool. Who listens to him call Marlins games besides you?
My sister listens to every game.
Okay, so there's two of you.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Marlins down 7-6, and the 2-1. I want to rip down the first baseline. That's in for a base hit. This could win it. It's rolling all the way to the wall. Hill in to tie it. Sanoha in to win it. And it's a walk-off two-run double for Jesus Sanchez. The Marlins' magic continues in Miami.
Jason Leisure with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
Let's do this thing. Let's talk with our buddy Jason Leisure. He joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. Jason, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it. What was your reaction to the Seth Wickersham report?
Ooh. Wow. Okay. So we're just going to ease into it here today, huh? That is the first and worst piece of bad PR for Caleb Williams since he got here, to me. I think there are a few issues here. And I'll say up front, I understand. I think everybody intellectually, logically understands why he would have had concerns about going to the Bears. For me, it starts with the fact that this is the first instance with Caleb Williams since he was on the scene for the Bears, and I would trace that back to the combine in February, that he came across as anything other than authentic and genuine. Because he was out there in February before the draft saying how excited he'd be to play for the Bears and rewrite history. And he got drafted by the Bears and did the Bear Claw symbol as kind of this college-type, Roll Tide-type fight on type signal to Bears fans, like, hey, I'm one of you now, I'm with you now. He does the Da Bears thing. And all along you don't know, you find out later that he was considering basically everything but the nuclear option to avoid coming to the Bears. So there's all this prima donna kind of phony narrative about who he is leading up to the draft. And then he gets here, and I find all that to be completely not accurate. That this guy is very authentic, very reflective, very genuine, and this undercuts that a little bit for me. And I think, in addition to that, Chicago, I'm sure, takes this very personally, because in Chicago, we take everything about Chicago very personally.
Man, that's it's interesting. I understand.
Am I overreacting?
I don't know. I guess it depends.
I think a little bit.
I want to say yes, but it depends on your perspective. And you watched him a lot closer than even we did. You were there on the Wednesdays when he spoke. You've been there in the room. And I myself have said that there's a little bit of a fake it till you make it kind of vibe from him sometimes. So do you think, I mean, are you implying that there's some phoniness that even bled in, because, or did he flip a switch? Because I guess I thought that he flipped a switch after all this stuff and was like, well, I'm here and this is what I got to do. And if he didn't flip the switch, then maybe some of what happened last year is on him. If he did flip the switch, then, you know, he was a kid in a bad spot.
I think it's both. And I also think that his fears about the Bears were pretty much all confirmed in year one. And the Bears would, by their own admission, say the coaches that they put him, that they entrusted him to and the start of his career to, were incompetent, because they had to fire them without even waiting till the end of the season to do it. And they revamped their entire offensive line. So they would, by their actions, have admitted that they did not take care of him in that way either. So everything he was worried about pretty well-founded, it turns out. I think that another element of this is that I don't think it would have been that hard for him to quiet a lot of this down last week. I don't know why, if he's in town, why they didn't. This came out on a Thursday. Why do you not have him in the building Thursday, kind of go over some of this, prep him for what's coming, the kind of questions he's going to get, work on some answers, and then bring him out there, have a press conference Friday, talk about it. I mean, fortunately for you, if you're the Bears, it happens to be a Friday, and it's the ultimate Friday news dump for you where he can talk about it. He can say something like, hey, that's how I felt at the time. It's not how I feel now. It was a long time ago. There's a new coach here. And I'm not going to keep talking about I'll take the questions now, but I'm not going to keep talking about this forever. We're not going to revisit this after today.
Yeah, I think that's the right approach. I actually had someone in PR reach out to me, not Bears PR, but in PR in general, reach out to me and say that's the approach that Caleb should take, is to hit this head on and be like, yes, I had issues with the way that this thing went, but now we are moving in a different direction with a new coach that is not going to leave me out here hanging and bear down. Like that should probably be his approach. My thing is, I don't share your same feeling that fans will care unless Caleb is a disaster next season. I think if everything is everything, then it's not a big deal. If he's bad, there will be a vocal minority of people that will use this and say, well, he never wanted to be here anyway, and they will question whether or not he's giving 100%.
Yeah, I agree with what you just said, although I'm not sure it'll be a minority. I think that this costs him some goodwill if things go bad. I think if Caleb comes out and he's excellent, then no one will remember this, and you know, it'll be nothing but celebrating how the Bears were able to recognize their mistakes quickly in his first year and correct them. But if he's not playing well, I think he has lost some of the benefit of the doubt with this story in people's minds and hearts, where, you know, had Caleb Williams not worked out at some point and without this, I think a lot of people would question whether it was the Bears doing what they've done, doing what Caleb Williams was afraid of, because we all see the talent with this guy. It's undeniable with this guy in a way that it was not with Justin Fields and Mitch Trubisky. I think now it will be, well, this guy didn't want to come here anyway, and then they did everything possible for him, got him the coach, the offensive line, the skill players, drafted people for him, and he still couldn't make it work. I think he's going to lose some goodwill if things go south.
Yeah, no, I think that is true. But in terms of last year and what we all witnessed, I think you are incorrect that the fans are at this moment going to turn. They might turn if things go bad, but at this moment, the vast majority of people that we've heard from, interacted with, are, as a texter says right here, empathetic to Caleb and any doubts which he had. Like, because we saw just the debacle that it was. I do think that he has to talk. He really needs to talk this week and say exactly what you said, Lawrence, that you heard from the PR professional. And I would add, he's got to say that when I spoke with Ryan Poles last year, it changed my perspective. And everything that Ryan Poles has done and Kevin Warren have done has only made me feel good about things, because those guys are still here. And those guys were there last year. So it's not just a regime change and investing in the new. He's living along with Poles and with Warren, and needs to make it clear that they were not part of the problem.
Now, the next time that he would talk, in theory, would be tomorrow, because the Bears have practice and access tomorrow.
Shouldn't he? But our guy Mark Grody says he's not slated to speak. Is he going to?
I was going to say, if, you know, even if he talks then, you're still letting this go on how many days longer than you could have already mostly closed it up back on Friday? If he doesn't, it's another week after that. I mean, how long will you let this sit here? I've also have heard the same thing that you just said from Mark Grody, that he's not going to talk tomorrow, even though that's the first opportunity where there was scheduled availability. It just doesn't make sense why you would let this drag on and on longer than it has to. And he could probably mostly close this up by coming out and talking about it now, and I don't think it'd be that hard.
I don't either. You rip the Band-Aid off, and because, like the texter said, like people in the mob are saying, there is a lot of sympathy and empathy for the situation that Caleb was in. And I think that people will give him the benefit and should give him the benefit of the doubt and say, all right, this is what I was on. I did talk to Ryan Poles, and that made me feel better. Things didn't get better last year, but we're a new team now, and I have all the assurances and support that I need now from Ben Johnson.
Yeah, man, because I can tell you that people close to Ben Johnson, their reaction to this was this. Old news.
Doesn't even pertain to Ben Johnson.
No, right. They needed a change, and change has come. But it's living on with us, partially because it's our job, but it's also living on with fans because we're so conditioned to the Bears being idiots. So this is another moment where they got to tell us.
It was confirmation bias,
yes,
for a lot of fans
100%.
To be like, of course that's what they did.
Of course.
And I'm not surprised that they did it. And I totally feel for Caleb and his frustration.
So I think you do publicly have to take a moment as an organization and for Caleb to say, yeah, some of the stuff that happened was unfortunate, but we've moved on from that and we feel great about where we are. And I'm sure bosses will say that. They should let Caleb say that too.
Now, another part of this that's really interesting to me is I've been thoroughly impressed in the first year plus with how Caleb Williams has handled things publicly. The way he has been forthcoming, it appears to me that he's been forthcoming. The things he's been willing to discuss, the things he's been willing to take on, the accountability that he's taken for things going badly and not throwing Matt Eberflus and Shane Waldron under the bus or his offensive line when he so easily could have. It's all been really impressive to me, and he is not at all given any indication he's afraid of controversy like this. And my first reaction was, you know, when I'm reading this, I'm like, oh, so he's got, you know, Seth Wickersham has sources that are telling him this is what they were thinking. No. When you look at it closer, these are like direct quotes. These are things that they are saying knowingly to a reporter. And my understanding is that this was run by them, the Williamses, again, before it was going to be released, and they didn't have any issue with the quotes that were going to be used. So if that's the case, I don't picture Caleb being afraid to address this in any way.
Joe Tooney gets a 2-year extension. What do you think of that? What does that mean? And does this give the Bears a little bit more cap flexibility?
Yeah, in the short term, if they need it. And also, you know, a lot is going to be made of the fact that I think he'll be 35 in the final year of his deal. Offensive linemen are capable of playing to that age. And especially if you're the Bears and you're in win now mode, it shouldn't matter that a guy is in his early 30s. Your timetable for being competitive isn't going to be, in your mind, at least if everything goes according to plan, your timetable is not going to be prolonged.
So Joe Tooney is here and locked and loaded. It's an exciting thing. What do the Bears coaches need to learn about their players this week? And what's going to go on this week? And what do you think the coach's perspective should be at this minicamp?
Yeah, it's through this and the upcoming OTAs, minicamp practices, things like that. They need to assess how well the pieces fit. Take DJ Moore and Cole Kmet, for example, and DeAndre Swift. How well can those guys be part of the Ben Johnson vision for what the offense should, Ben's vision for what the offense should look like? What is their versatility? So what all can you do with DJ Moore, for example? And really their willingness. I think that's the biggest thing being looked at right now is this is your first impression with the new coaching staff. And they're essentially, even though individual players have good track records, there is no collective track record here for the Bears. They've won 15 games over the last 3 seasons, Matt. So there is nothing here to be precious about. There is nothing here. There should be no tolerance, and I don't think there will be any tolerance by the new coaching staff for, well, I do it this way, or I like to play this. No. The way you've been playing has been part of 15-37 or whatever the record is over the last 3 years. So that doesn't really matter anymore. I think there's going to be a lot of assessing who is willing to do what is asked, even if it's not what they've done before or not what their preference is.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see like how this week plays out too, where we had this great conversation with JT O'Sullivan earlier in the show, and he was great talking about some of the guys that maybe didn't put out the same type of effort that he was expecting last year. It seems as if with a new coach and one that who is known for saying no block, no rock, that if guys think that they're going to just kind of sleepwalk through this, they're going to end up not getting the opportunities that they want.
And along with that, you know, how much are Ben and Johnson and Eric Bieniemy going to tolerate DeAndre Swift kind of shifting just side to side, running 12 yards to get one out of the backfield? How much are they going to tolerate the DJ Moore bad body language? How much are they going to, you know, what are they going to do about, for example, Tyreek Stevenson's attentiveness? I think that there is going to be so much less margin for things like that than there was last year.
Good. That's how it's supposed to work. It's pro sports. It's football. Let's have some accountability. Be fearless about it and figure out everything that you can and use this offseason to figure out as much of it as you can before you get to August. Hey, now that Tooney is signed and you've got a little more cost certainty, you think a free agent running back is next? Are they going to wait for a while? What do you think they're going to do?
Well, there's nobody big there to go get.
J.K. Dobbins, yeah. Nick Chubb.
Yeah, it's those. I mean, those guys are on the wrong side of their prime. So, I mean, they could go get one of those guys. They have the space to go get one of those guys. But I'm not sure if they. That's another thing that you want to learn right now, Matt. You want to assess whether can Roschon Johnson be that for you. Can Roschon Johnson and DeAndre Swift being willing to play the way you're telling him to play be good enough for you that you don't go do something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Jason, as always, man, we appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me, guys.
Great response on interesting sides of it in terms of whether Caleb should speak in the text and via the mob on Twitch. I would assume a texter says, look, it's not like this was said about the Williams family. This stuff was said by the Williams family. Caleb addressed it then. He should address it now. I think there's some fairness to that.
I 100% agree. And I think that the point that Jason's making, and when we talked about this a little bit yesterday, there were choices that he made in some of the quotes that he didn't have to. And if what Jason is saying is true, and Wickersham was probably like, you sure you want me to put this in the book?
We're on the record here. You good with that?
Yeah. Like, then, yeah, I think that it's incumbent upon him to maybe clarify some stuff and then try to figure out, like, why it was important. I'd love to know why he thought it was important to say some of the things that he said.
And I'll say this. His decision, seemingly his family decision, Dad, I'm not going to go to this final place where we nuke the city, where we like rip the organization and talk about how we don't want to do it. I'm not going to go to that place. That reflects well on him.
I agree.
Reflects well on him sort of like morally and ethically. And it also reflects on him that he talked to Ryan Poles and believes in Ryan Poles, and that guy's still here.
It reflects on his ability to see it from a different perspective and allowing Poles to convince him that, you know what, we are going to do all this stuff. Now, granted, if I'm Caleb and I did give you the opportunity to convince me, I was convinced, I walked in, it wasn't what you said it was going to be.
Right.
I am upset about that.
Right, but we don't know.
And rightfully.
For sure, but maybe part of the conversation was, look, if this doesn't go well, you believe me, I will make big changes and we'll make sure it goes well. If for some reason, like, you know, it's so like, you know, maybe Caleb is in on that along the way with your boss that like, we're going to make sure things are good. If they're not, we'll talk and I'll sort it out.
Yeah, maybe. But I do think that it should be addressed, and I think that it can be addressed and dismissed fairly easily.
I think so, too.
By
him.
I think
so, too.
And I think that most people would go, we hear you. We get it. We completely understand.
I will think it's an odd choice if he doesn't speak during this 3-day camp. I will deem that an odd choice.
Yeah, and I know that he's been out in the city. He was at Lane Tech. You know, he could just kind of popped up inside an assembly at Lane Tech earlier in late last was Friday, right? Where he did that. And the kids, like, Caleb is beloved, man. People want him to win and succeed. And he has not been afraid to be here with Bears fans. I don't think it's even that difficult for him, honestly, to say his truth to the people assembled in front of him over the next couple of days. Mm-hmm. I think it's a layup.
Plus, he could drop a da Pope right there at the podium if he wants to.
If he wanted to do that.
If he wanted to do that, he could. There's we have a Cubs lineup. Guess who's hitting leadoff?
Well, PCA.
Is it or is it Ian Happ who's been activated? We'll tell you after you hear from Jed Hoyer talking about leadoff and you hear Ian Happ's reaction to being asked about Jed Hoyer talking about leadoff. Trust us, it's kind of spicy and it's pretty delicious. You'll get it next on Spiegel and Holmes on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Hi, Boog. We're a very important radio show, you know?
Yeah, you are. So very important.
I mean, do people have any idea?
That was my sincerity there. You want me another reading of that?
Yeah.
I'm going to count you down, okay? In three, two, one.
So very important.
Oh, perfect. That feels nice.
Yeah.
Afternoons on The Score.
Yeah, tickets laying around? Let me know.
Coach, we do have some tickets laying around. Simple Minds Alive and Kicking Tour 2025 with special guests Soft Cell and Modern English. You can check out the show Friday, June 20th, the Huntington Bank Pavilion at Northerly Island. Tickets are available on LiveNation.com. Be caller 6 right now to 312-540-0670. That's 312-540-0670.
I had never known that this song by Soft Cell is a cover until someone sent me the song, Gloria Jones. It's an old soul song.
Yeah.
I had never known that.
I went down a Instagram rabbit hole on it, and it was interesting that it is that. Oh, Taylor.
Don't touch me, please, Lawrence.
I wasn't planning on it.
I know, but I cannot
stand. But it's good to set boundaries.
I cannot stand the way you tease. Actually, I like the way you tease radio segments. Yeah, do it very nicely.
Well, they pay me the medium bucks.
that's gonna change.
Wait, did you get $1 million deal?
No, Joe Kelly. No, not yet. But, you know, give it time.
We'll see.
Just send them the book. Send them the book.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. No longer are we worried about... We didn't even tell Tanny. Tanny, we're not worried about Wojo anymore. You know who we're going after now? Boys to Men. Mariah Carey. Because we've been number one now for 28 weeks. And that's more than Boys to Men, End of the Road. That's twice as long.
Which is why we're going to sing End of the Road together. Here at the end of the show.
That's not what we're going to do.
We're not?
But maybe. We've been singing a lot today.
You don't know. You don't know. Kevin Warren would like it.
We don't know if that's in the algorithm, but maybe.
The Kevin Warren soul playlist is just starting to grow. But that's not why you called. Jed Hoyer was on the radio station this morning with Mully and Haw. Lots of newsy nuggets to discuss, and they discussed them all. And he talked about the impending activation of Ian Happ, which has now taken place. And we do have a Cubs lineup, which we'll give you in a couple minutes here. And they also asked him about Pete Crow Armstrong hitting leadoff. And that's been working nicely. So who's going to hit leadoff when Ian Happ comes back? Here's Jed.
I think he can definitely do that job for sure. I think we have a couple really good options. I think Ian did a great job in that spot. He sees so many pitches. He gets on base. I think when you have him and Tucker, you know, hitting 1-2, there's so much traffic on the bases for the other guys. I think it really helps. And then with Pete, you know, Pete's a different style of hitter. It's just he's dangerous right away. You know, the way he's hitting power, and obviously, you know, if he gets on base, he creates havoc. So I think we have two really good options, and you know, unclear how we'll go going forward. You know, my guess is that Ian will start leading off again, and Pete will probably not go quite as far down in the order. But you know, obviously, Craig and I will talk about that. But I think that the position has evolved. I mean, honestly, how much criticism we got for trying, you know, Kyle Schwarber in that role. I remember in Boston, we got a lot of criticism for putting Kevin Youkilis in that role, and people thought that was, that was kind of crazy. And I do think that now, as you know, Shohei Ohtani, you know, is leading off, and it's not a surprise to anyone that you would put a huge power hitter, and this is a guy that's dangerous at the top of the lineup. And Schwarber's not doing it this year, but he did it in the past with Philly. So, certainly I think to myself, if you're a pitcher, starting off a game, and you're worried about your first pitch of the game getting hit for a homer, I mean, it's unsettling. And so I do think that that's getting your best hitters the most at bats, and also having some fear in the opposing pitcher right away. I think there's real value in that.
So that's Jed Hoyer, I think, trying to be respectful.
Very diplomatic answer.
To Pete Crow Armstrong and the job he's done at leadoff, and respectful to Craig Counsell and letting the cat out of the bag early in the morning. And then Ian Happ is on with the midday show, and Marshall Harris asks Ian about those comments from Jed.
Where will you be hitting in this batting order? Because we were told you'd be the leadoff guy when you came back, but then Jed Hoyer this morning kind of sounded like there was going to be some type of discussion.
Yeah, I guess we'll all know when the lineup's announced.
All right.
That's it from Ian Happ.
Oh, a little snippy.
Got to be some discussion. Huh? I guess we'll find out when the lineup's announced.
Well, the lineup has been announced.
Who's hitting leadoff?
Ian Happ is hitting leadoff because he should be. But we'll get back to that in a second.
Yeah.
The interesting part is not him and Tucker. It's Happ, Suzuki, Tucker, Kelly, Swanson, PCA, Horner, Turner, Shaw.
That is interesting on a lot of levels.
Mm-hmm.
PCA goes all the way back down to 6, even though he's been killing it. I thought maybe they'd put him 4.
Weathers is left-handed, but Pete's also been hitting left-handed pitching.
Sure, but Carson Kelly has had incredible at-bats, and Counsell loves his at-bats, especially against lefties. So, man, so you said Saya's second?
Yep.
Move Tucker to third?
Tucker is third, so...
Against the lefty.
To go against the lefty.
Get Saya more plate appearances, assure him of more plate appearances against the lefty, and force the Marlins to consider making a change early and end up with Tucker against a righty.
Yep.
At some point in the middle of the game. I get it. So
Look, here's how I see it.
Okay.
And I like what Jed had to say about it, honestly. Like, Ian Happ's a better choice to be the leadoff hitter. And they, I don't want to say got away with, because it was more than that. PCA did a great job leading off. I do think that he is better served in another place in the lineup. For me, depending on matchup, but almost all the time, he would be hitting in the top 3.
Who, Pete?
For me. But, okay, he also provides some stuff for you in the 6 hole.
Oh, my God, for sure. You've got some possible pop down there. And you said Dansby's in the 5 hole, right? Dansby's at-bats have been incredible.
Yes.
Dansby has been terrific the last, 3.5-4 weeks? Not just the results, but the at-bats themselves.
Oh, there was one lineup thing that I should have mentioned but didn't.
Because I'm the lineupista.
You are. And it's funny because we were talking about this before the show, too. Saya's playing right field. Tucker's your DH.
Tucker's your DH tonight.
He had a bad night in right field yesterday.
And he also got banged up a little bit trying to steal that home run. He got banged up there, so that's probably what it's about. And Saya's been pretty good in left field for the most part.
I like Saya a lot in left field, but that's Ian's position.
I don't think Kyle Tucker is a very good right fielder.
I'm with you.
And I think that is not something I knew. And Chris Tannehill was on this right away at the beginning of the year. Right field down there in Houston is a hell of a lot easier to play than right field in Wrigley or in other places.
Yeah, it's different. And it's not, I don't think it's effort. I honestly don't think that he tracks the ball particularly well.
That could be. I see him playing cautious. I see some cautiousness. And that could be a lack of comfortability. Or it could be a lack of desire to get hurt. I don't know. I just see some caution, which you can get away with in left field. Like, and I don't know that his skill level in right is going to affect the sticker price.
No.
I feel like it should.
Nope.
I feel like it should.
You think he's not a $500 million guy playing like that?
Our guy Dustin Rhodes, who we make fun of a lot, said this morning, Kyle Tucker did not play like a $500 million player on a Monday night in Miami. And I texted him. I said, you know what? That is a valid sports radio comment.
Got to give Dustino his credit when credit is due.
I thought that was, it's a little inflammatory, but it's valid. It's valid. Last night it in right field, and that ground rule double, man, Palencia, that he gave up.
Someone texted, Kyle Tucker be loafing.
No loafs. Rod Marinelli said no loafs. Which is weird because his daughter's restaurant had terrific bread. They made really good bread.
I'd be shocked if they didn't. Right?
Yeah, of course. But I mean, how do you have a restaurant without loaves? You know what I mean? It's difficult. I guess you could have rolls, something like that. Tortillas, perhaps.
Tortillas. You're speaking my language. Dude, now.
Don't fill up on the bread at La Strega, please.
Yeah,
whatever
it's a
you
mistake.
Do. Yeah.
Well, you won't because there's no loaves there. So
they don't
it's
have
all
it.
Gonna be fine. Look, Ian App deserves to hit lead off. And Jed was on the Marquee broadcast the other day and said that their offense, that the tone is set by Happ and Tucker. That was his perception on the season. And I think that's true. I think Ian Happ sets a really good tone. He'll ambush every once in a while, but he takes really good at bats. He grinds them out.
What I think is really good about that, and this is like the concept of managing, not managing a game, but managing people. I think that Jed understands that Ian Happ is somebody inside that clubhouse. And even though you have Tucker here and you have PCA ascending, you want to make sure that other players don't feel like they're being left behind mm-hmm. in this. I think it was a very magnanimous and smart way for Jed to talk about Ian.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that is true. You want to hear a great baseball number?
Sure.
Last night, Kyle Schwarber hit his 300th home run. And he's going to hit a lot of them. And
where you got him max now? I got him at like 460.
Yeah, he's going to get to four. And if he stays healthy, he could get to five, especially the way that he's now hitting lefties. I mean, like my respect for that guy is just off the charts. He might get to 500. Here are the fewest career hits needed to reach 300 career Major League Baseball home runs.
Okay.
So these are the guys who hit home runs the most among all of their career hits before they got to 300, right? Kyle Schwarber's number one. Mark McGwire is number two. Aaron Judge is number three.
What he's doing is unreal.
Harmon Killebrew is number four. And Adam Dunn is number five.
I like that.
So those are the dudes who hit the biggest percentage of homers among their total hits. So it's not just like home run or nothing guys, three true outcome guys, but there are some sitting right there in there.
There's no doubt. By the way, tonight the Cubs continue their series against Miami with the Marlins. Pregame coverage starts at 5:05. Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer will have first pitch at 5:40. On the Score in the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. When we come back, we will salute a legend. Next, here on the Score.
Spiegel and Holmes Show Flashback. Flashback. Flashback.
George Wentz with us. George, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. That was quite an intro. Jeez, my life flashed before my eyes. I didn't remember half of that stuff.
Well, at least it was a good life, right? I mean, it still is, obviously. But
so far, so good, yeah.
You get to do a sketch with Michael Jordan.
We got him into a grass skirt and coconut bra.
Did that take convincing?
Double. Oh, I don't think so. No, he was down. He wanted to play.
Yeah, we lost George Wendt today. For those of you who are just tuning in to the Score, so we've been talking a little bit about him throughout the show, and obviously you get an opportunity to talk with him. You guys had a great chat with George Wendt and talked to him about all sorts of stuff, about his life and about his career, and you asked him about Cheers and what his favorite moment was from being in and on that series.
We were talking about Cheers and you know, I love, there's a moment in the series finale, and it's a beautifully written entire series, but a beautifully written series finale when everybody has left the bar and it's just you,
and Ted Danson as the bartender there left. And we pulled the clip. This is towards the end of the series finale of Cheers.
You know what I think the most important thing in life is? It's love. You want to know what I love?
Beer, Norm?
Yeah, have a quick one.
You know what I love? Beer, Norm. And you're like, oh, yeah, I'll go, Gwen. You come back in. Everybody's left. It's this emotional thing where everybody leaves, but you sit back down for one more. Did you know how good that series was, how good the writing was as you were doing it, George?
Yes. I mean, it was obvious. When I first got on board, when we all first got on board, I mean, the track record of the Charles Brothers and Jim Burrows was fantastic with Taxi, and they had even been on Mary Tyler Moore and things like that. So I had a pretty good idea it was going to be good, and it took quite a while, a year and a half, maybe 2 years, before audiences really caught on. And then, of course, we got Bill Cosby came on the air, and that just was a smash hit from the very first episode, and we just rolled in the afterglow.
Man, that's cool. I'd forgotten that we even asked him about that. That's awesome. George went to Notre Dame, Lawrence, and had a 0.0 grade point average and dropped out, and then started doing comedy at Second City and found his voice, found his purpose, and had an unbelievable career starting from that point on.
Supporter of DePaul basketball, too.
Really?
George Went? Absolutely.
How about that?
Yeah. Man, he's a DePaul legend for sure, for his help in bringing attention to the program. And it's when you see someone that you can identify with and is comfortable with the identification, I think that's one of the things that made George Went special, is that he was just kind of always the same guy. Like, this brilliant actor was, whenever you would see him, he was comfortable enough to be that thing that you thought. Like, he wasn't offended that he wasn't, like, the character, even though he was. You know what I mean?
I do. I'm looking at a tweet. I think that's well said, Lawrence. I'm looking at a tweet from Jason Benetti, who says that during 2020... the great Ken Levine brought a bunch of sportscasters together for a table read of an entire episode of Cheers. This was during the during COVID.
So everyone's on Zoom.
And just looking for stuff to do for fun, because they're not doing games. And Jason continues, we needed someone to play Norm. And I'm just looking at the boxes here on the screen. I see Benetti. I see Chip Carey. I see Dave Fleming of the Giants broadcast group. I see Susan Waldman of the Yankees broadcast. That's Beth Mowins right there. And he says, we needed someone to play Norm. So Ken called George Went. And George said yes. And we all laughed together a lot. RIP to an extremely kind, funny human being. And apparently that table read is on YouTube. Like, it looks like 10 MLB broadcasters and George Went reading an entire episode of Cheers.
How dope is that?
Oh, my God. That's so cool.
Like, the idea that you would just, oh, yeah, let's call him. Let's see what George is doing. See what he's up to.
I gotta watch this thing. I don't know who Benetti played. He's in a suit. He's the only one in a suit. Does that mean he was Frazier?
Was he
coach?
It would be perfect casting if Benetti was Frazier.
And perfect for Frazier. I totally agree. And he's the only one in the suit. That's got to be the case. Man, that's really cool.
Yeah, that's super cool stuff.
He gave us one more, Speaks. I didn't remember this, and so I was going back, listening to the interview from 2022 with George Went. This one, at the time, we said, oh, we have to keep using this, but now I think we absolutely have to. This is like a phrase that he gave us that day.
I was in the White Horse Tavern in New York with a shot in one hand and a beer in the other. She comes up, hi, I'm Valerie. I just wanted to say hello. And she reaches her hand out as if to shake. And I like, I had no hand. You know, she goes, ah, Irish handcuffs.
The Irish handcuffs.
Only if you're okay with that, Tanny.
Yeah, Tanny. You can.
Oh, I'm actually not okay with that. Sorry. I dumped it all, yeah. Scrub that, Alex. Don't podcast that.
You brought it up just to catch us.
I mean, why don't we check back with JT O'Sullivan and find out if he's okay with that?
By now, he's opening the restaurant, right? He's opening JT O'Sullivan's. He's got to get over there. They got to marry the catch-ups. He's got to, like...
Got to get the buckets ready.
Thank
you. He's got a bucket special.
Yeah, one hit on this show. They'll get that Shula's across the street. Get it right out of there. Put it at JT O'Sullivan's.
Put it at JT O'Sullivan's. I mean, that place has an incredible Monte Cristo. You know what they do? They fry it. It's like the fried kind of Monte Cristo with the syrup. They serve it with that. Do you like that kind?
100%.
That's how Bennigan's does it, by the way. I can report. As a Monte Cristo aficionado, there was a while there where it, like...
That's really interesting.
Shut up, Pat. Whatever, Hall of Famer. Whatever, Pat.
I like that Pat uses, like, dismissive drops.
Well, not always. Sometimes he's complimentary. Every once in a while... He'll tell you that something went extremely well. He does that with everybody who's in the booth. You do a read, you hand it off to Pat, and he gives you a compliment, makes you feel good.
There was a funny
moment. Very good, Matt. Thank you.
There's a fun moment yesterday when they were doing the attendance game.
Yeah.
And I was laughing because apparently he said, he was like, did you charge? Because the engineer, he's like, did you charge him the fee? And Zach was like, oh, yeah, I charged him the fee. He's like, I don't know if I would charge him. And he's like, how much is it? And he's like, oh, it's $300. And it, basically, Pat was like, run me my money. It was pretty great. He's like, where's my hundo in this?
Oh, it's tremendous,
an
man.
An absolute joy. If you want to check out any of the cool interviews we did today, whether it was JT O'Sullivan or Jason Leisure or Nico Horner. Nico, by the way, brought to you by Huntington, home of asterisk free checking. More at Huntington.com/yourmoney. Check out the Odyssey Rewind function on the app. It's pretty good, yeah, and today's show was excellent.
I agree, and Nico's getting closer on the pizza. He's zeroing in on his pizza for the fine folks at Rinaldi's, the Hot Horner special of some kind that he's going to be doing.
I like that. Tomorrow's show is kind of inverted. The Cubs play at noon tomorrow, so we're thinking 3:30. We'll get on the air, and then we'll get after it for sure.
You know what we'll have, too, is Bears tape from day one of minicamp.
That's right. We'll see if the Bears are going to put Caleb out there. Maybe they'll change up the schedule, and if not, we'll hear from other folks, which is totally fine. For Alex, for Tanny, who is apparently Alex, and for my partner, Matt Spiegel, I'm Lawrence Holmes saying thank you so much for the love and support you show this show. We will try to repay the favor tomorrow after Cubs baseball, which is next on The Score.
All right, guys. Have a great life.
Have a good show.
We'll try.
What?